Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, coming to you on the 13th of January, 2015. And today we're going to be talking about Tor. Do you know Tor? The Onion Router. And if you don't know about Tor, of course, you can go to torproject.org to find out more about it, specifically in the overview section, where you will learn in the beginning of the overview that Tor is a network of virtual tunnels that allows people and groups to improve their privacy and security on the internet. It also enables software developers to create new communication tools with built-in privacy features. Tor provides the foundation for a range of applications that allow organizations and individuals to share information over public networks without compromising their privacy. And for those of you who are not so much into the technobabble, basically Tor is the Onion Router, T-O-R, the Onion Router, which is the most popular proxy network for internet anonymizing, which is a difficult word to say. And it is called an onion router because traffic goes through many different layers of encrypting servers. And the it's an interesting idea, and it has been talked about quite a lot in relation to the Snowden affair, or the snow job, as I like to call it. Specifically, in case you didn't notice during your holiday merrymaking, there was a DefenseWorld.net article reporting on a Der Spiegel, a German magazine article, talking about how Tor, C-Space, and ZRTP, basically text and encryption software, together is something that the NSA considers to be quote-unquote catastrophic because they apparently just cannot penetrate that privacy. Or so they like you to believe. And I think there's more to that story. So in order to start peeling back the layers of this onion and some very interesting developments that occurred in the last couple of months regarding some of the developers of Tor, we're going to bring into this conversation our old friend Pierce Redman of Porkins Policy Review at porkinspolicyreview.wordpress.com. Pierce Redman, always good to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, absolutely, James. It's always a pleasure and an honor to be on your show, and I'm very excited to be talking about Tor and some of the interesting developments that have been happening, as you said, in the past couple of months regarding it.
Well, that's exactly right, and I'm excited to be talking about this with you because, as I think I tweeted and put in the member newsletter back several months ago, you had a very good episode of your podcast, Porkins Policy Radio, Episode 26 on Peeling the Onion Behind Tor, EFF, and John Perry Barlow, where you go into the connection between those aforementioned organizations and individuals, as well as the Omidyar Network and Jacob Applebaum and the NSA, and a very interesting mixture of entities that are behind this this Tor project. And of course, you can also get that from tor.project.org itself in the inception part of the About section, where it says, Tor was originally designed, implemented, and deployed as a third-generation onion routing project of the U.S. Naval Research Laboratory, which of course is where this all originated from, which was the basis for a very interesting Pando Daily article back in July of last year. Almost everyone involved in developing Tor was or is funded by the U.S. government. There's just such an interesting mixture of entities involved in this privacy software that's supposedly going to prevent the NSA from ever finding out what you do. So let's just start today's conversation by taking a look at that podcast episode you put together last year, talking about some of these characters and how they relate to each other in this onion stew that that we have going on.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And I was I'd always been interested in Tor as an entity simply because of its connections, as you said, to naval research and later to DARPA. But I hadn't given it much thought for a while until I read Yasha Levine's article for Pando Daily. And then I started doing my own research. Because while Yasha Levine has done some really interesting work, I think there are a lot more pieces to this whole puzzle. And of course, as you mentioned before, Tor started in 1995 with naval research, and then slowly evolved into a much larger sort of a project. And the funding of this shifted slightly to some very interesting organizations. We have, we'll just sort of do this as fast as we can, but we have in 2004, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which I'm sure your listeners are very familiar with, which until very recently was headed by John Perry Barlow, who is a former lyricist for the Grateful Dead and is a very big internet activist. And in 2004, I would say this is probably one of the major developments for the Tor project, because the funding goes almost exclusively to EFF at the exact same time that Pierre Omidyar starts becoming a supporter of the Electronic Frontier Foundation and starts funding them through the Omidyar network. And this goes back and forth, and you know, supposedly it was just the EFF that was funding Tor at that point, and then that sort of changes a little bit, and we see the DARPA getting more deeply involved. We see groups such as the International Board of Broadcasters, which is a you know, for all intents and purposes, is a CIA front. The SRI, which is a think tank institute in California with a deep connections to the CIA and the deep state, they get involved as well. And we get a whole sort of interesting cadre of Tor developers that, of course, now are quite popular in the sort of internet activist community. People like you mentioned, Jacob Applebaum, Runa Sandvik, Roger Dingledon, many of these characters. And of course, all of them are deeply linked with this whole sort of Snowden, you know, storyline. We have Runa Sandvik, of course, who was a Tor developer, was the correspondent with Snowden while he was still working at the NSA in Hawaii. And I'm sure your listeners are also familiar with an interesting article that was written by Kevin Polson in Wired magazine, which chronicled the meeting of Snowden and Sandvik, who, you know, talked about, you know, online about Tor and how wonderful it was. And Sandvik actually traveled to Hawaii and gave a crypto party with Snowden, which was allegedly filmed by Snowden's girlfriend. And I'm sure you and me would love to see what was actually said during this crypto party. But as I said, we've got various different connections. So we have EFF. We have John Perry Barlow, of course, who's a very interesting character who at various times will sort of play up this whole sort of, you know, crypto anarchist sort of a mindset or a you know, philosophy, while he moonlighted in the 1990s as a CIA analyst, or not analyst per se, but he gave talks at the CIA. He advised them on certain things. You know, he met in a very big conference. He spoke with General Hayden, who at the time was the ostensible head of the NSA. So we have all of these very interesting characters who are sort of revolving around Tor. And later, of course, we see the injection of the, Glenn Greenwald, Laura Poitras, again, Pierre Omidyar with the whole First Look Media. And we also see the beginnings of this new group, the Freedom of the Press Foundation, which is stocked almost entirely with former Tor developers as well as former members of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and of course has on the board of you know, advisors Edward Snowden, you know, phony whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, Glenn Greenwald, Laura Poitras. It's got Kevin Polson, who is the sort of, you know, official gatekeeper of much of the early Snowden history. Runa Sandvik, as I've mentioned, Jacob Applebaum, the Ashkan Soltani, who worked for The Washington Post, and he won a the 2014 Pulitzer Prize. He is also on the board of the Freedom of the Press Foundation. So as I started to kind of research this and dive into it, I saw that essentially we have Tor, this whole Snowden story, the Freedom of the Press Foundation, Electronic Frontier Foundation, you know, the Pierre Omidyar Network, and all of these are essentially the same thing. While they might have different acronyms and different names, and they might try to sort of portray themselves as independent, they are all ultimately being funded by a handful of individuals, including George Soros, the Tides Foundation, and most importantly, perhaps, is Pierre Omidyar, who runs First Look Media and is the sort of, you know, arbiter of what is, you know, okay and what's not okay to say in regards to the whole Edward Snowden story. So this really raises some very profound questions about Tor, you know, leaving aside the fact that Tor receives almost all of its money and funding from either the State Department or the CIA or the Defense Department. We have Tor being trumpeted by many people who are actively working for the, you know, U.S. government in developing Tor, while at the same time simultaneously running organizations which are claiming to be, you know, critical of, you know, government overreach, you know, in the internet. So, you know, you're sort of met with this very troubling sort of picture where essentially, you know, the people that are, you know, working for the government are criticizing the government. The people that are advocating that you use Tor are actively collaborating with them. And, you know, to many people, this sort of, you know, flies under the radar. They don't really see this. Instead, they see Edward Snowden, you know, this, you know, patron saint of Western values and internet security. We've got the power of celebrity with people like John Cusack, who are also on the board at the Freedom of the Press Foundation, and people such as Daniel Ellsberg, who, you know, lends a lot of credence to certain people and is seen as this, you know, wonderful, amazing person. But, you know, and we can kind of pick that apart any way you want, James, but essentially what's important to take when you're looking at all of this is that essentially you have a very small handful of people that are funding this, that are running this, and that are also, you know, running the sort of major media stories regarding all of this. So the entire narrative is being controlled by a handful of people. And I think that the more you start to look into this, the more you start to understand that perhaps, you know, beyond a sort of psyop with Snowden, that this could even possibly be some sort of deep state event, that this there is more to this whole leaking of the NSA documents. There is more to all of these various groups than, you know, simply raising awareness. You know, again, this is a very important story because, you know, people, as we'll get to, I think, soon, are being targeted for any sort of criticism of this. And this is a really scary development, especially coming from a group of individuals which claim to, you know, stand for anonymity, stand for privacy, stand for freedom of speech.
Well, Pierce, you have just bitten off more than a mouthful there, and I hope people can analyze what you have just said in a deeper level and a deeper way than I think might seem to present itself at first glance, because I think the first blush of most people when listening to that would say, oh, this sounds like a guilt by association argument. I mean, just because the funding is coming from here or just because this person is associated with it doesn't mean that the software itself, which is open source and everyone, you know, can take a look at it, doesn't mean that that is compromised. And I think there's a couple of things to say there. I mean, first of all, it isn't just the sort of guilt by association or the where the funding is coming from. It's, as you point out, the people who are connected through this story are, I mean, it's just an incredible cast of characters that includes every single aspect and side of this Snowden story. Basically, the Snowden drama is one of the foci for this story, and it connects so many different people, including the person who, you know, quote-unquote owns the Snowden story, Pierre Omidyar of the first Look. I mean, it's just such an incredible collusion of various figures that all come together in this onion router network, as it were. And I think it merits more scrutiny than I think some people will want to dismiss it as. But I think there's another side to this as well, which is also the claim, of course, the fundamental claim of Tor and its advocates is that, well, this is anonymizing software and the NSA hates it and this is going to protect you, which not only is wrong and demonstrably wrong, but of course, because it is wrong, can be extremely dangerous for people who actually are interested in protecting their identity online, who fall for that sort of that pipe dream, as John Young once said on this program, that online anonymity is a pipe dream. And I tend to agree with him because of the various things that we found out over the years, including a Cryptogon.com article that I often cite that goes back to May of 2007, where the owner of the Cryptogon site goes through in some degree of technical detail detail about how high-traffic colluding Tor routers in Washington, D.C. Compromise, basically, the online anonymity promised by the Tor software. And just a few months after that article was written, lo and behold, we have this from securityfocus.com, embassy leaks highlight the pitfalls of Tor, talking about a Swedish security professional that posted the usernames and passwords for 100 email accounts belonging to various nations, embassies, and political parties. Basically, he was able to volunteer as a server for to route traffic for the Tor project, and because he was in that position and was able to collect some of the information as it escaped out of an exit node, he was able to actually collect emails and usernames and passwords of highly sensitive information, showing that this can be compromised. But again, that was back in 2007, so all of that has been patched up, right? Well, 2013, we have NBCNews.com, how the NSA got to anonymized Tor users, talking about what the NSA did was set up what is known as a man-in-the-middle attack. First, it closely monitored known Tor exit nodes, where anonymized traffic emerges from the Tor network, waiting for users looking to do a basic talk task like visit Google. Then, by using the agency's access to internet infrastructure to respond before Google can, NSA agents would redirect the user's browser to a special web page where a trap would be sprung. So, if you have control of the backbone of the internet, these types of things can still be compromised in various ways. We have more January of 2014. We have a TomsGuide.com article, Spoiled Onions in the Tor Network, Researcher Finds. We have ITWorld.com back in July of 2013, has Tor been bugged by the NSA? So there are important technical issues here, and I'm sure Tor advocates would still continue to say, well, you know, obviously it's a work in progress, and obviously if you make mistakes when implementing the sort of Tor software on your system, and if you don't, you know, protect your privacy in the right way, it's still possible that you could be exposed and all of this type of thing. But I think it's sort of the difference between the dream that is being sold and the reality, which can still be quite important for people who genuinely are seeking online anonymity. So I don't know if you want to speak to that issue. I know there's a lot of technical details there, and I don't claim to be an expert in all of the technical details of what's being offered here, but it seems that this network has been compromised in the past, and I think it would be naive to assume that the NSA, with access to the trunk of the internet, the data as it's flowing, would not be in some way able to eventually basically not only identify Tor users, but specifically hone in on them because of the fact that they're using these known Tor servers.
Oh no, I think that's an excellent point. And again, when you engage people in this sort of conversation, of course, as you said before, oh, that's guilt by association. You know, not everything is a conspiracy. These sort of things, but on a technical standpoint, and again, I myself don't claim to be a technical expert on Tor. But essentially what you were saying there in terms of the exit nodes, that is a major problem with the Tor network itself, is that the way that Tor was developed, the program itself will seek out the fastest sort of route to exchange the information. So, you know, James, me and you could set up Tor nodes right now at our homes, but most likely not a lot of traffic is going to be flowing through them because we don't have the kind of bandwidth that the Tor program itself is going to be looking for. Now, where might there be a lot of bandwidth? Well, perhaps at the NSA facility in Hawaii, where Edward Snowden set up multiple Tor nodes. That is a major sort of focus for where Tor traffic is going to be going from. So if we go from that sort of idea, it's really not very difficult for NSA to find these particular exit nodes and simply just, you know, wait there for all of this traffic to come through and then collect everything all at once. So, you know, that the sort of technical aspects, there are serious technical problems with the way in which Tor works. And again, I don't want to scare people away from this sort of possible solution to, you know, getting around some of the ever invasive privacy problems that the NSA is presenting to us, because I think that, you know, in theory, of course, Tor could be a great sort of platform. And indeed, if you really know what you're doing, you can be fairly anonymous on Tor. There are ways of getting around this if you know what you're doing. But, you know, for many people, they sort of see the sort of buzz, you know, headline, oh, Tor is so great. They'll sign up for Tor, and essentially they're not protected whatsoever. And again, you're talking about a program that was designed by naval intelligence for naval spies, for, you know, the CIA, for all sorts of spies. And of course, they want to fill the Tor network with as many different people as they can. So of course, they will appeal to the sort of, you know, seedier side of the internet through things like the Silk Road and the drug trade, as well as child pornography, you know, things of that nature, spies, of course, and then just sort of everyday people that don't want, you know, Google to know every little bit of their information. But again, you're entering into a program that was designed for spies by spies. So you really have to wonder about that. And furthermore, of course, you know, all of this sort of stuff about the NSA hates Tor is complete nonsense. And even in some of the you know, slides that Snowden released through Glenn Greenwald and Pierre Omidyar, show that the NSA, in fact, actually wants more people on Tor because they've found that it's such a great, you know, sort of stomping ground to find certain people. And just a few days ago, I had a listener tweet me a link that I didn't even mention in my podcast, I don't think, but Roger Dingledon, who is the sort of, you know, main developer, main head of Tor, gave a long conference speech at NSA headquarters where he talked about how wonderful Tor was and how the NSA should use it. And again, Dingledon and Applebaum will, when selling Tor to certain people, will certainly promote the if you want to be you know, an activist and you know, you want to fight the, you know, the man, well then Tor is great. But if they're selling this to a police department or some sort of intelligence apparatus, they will play up how, you know, wonderful it is. Your spies can do whatever they want, no one can find them. So, you know, again, they're playing both sides of this, and of course they will deny this, you know, left and right. But you know, again, ultimately, you know, I would implore anyone who is, you know, at all curious about this to really start to look into this and to start, you know, connecting the dots for yourself, because it is all there in front of you. There, and that's what's so funny about Tor is that they don't deny that they're being funded by the government, but they simply deny that that's a bad thing. They play up this whole idea that, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Not everything the government does is bad, and you will even see Tor supporters quoting Edward Snowden, who, of course, has not really, you know, condemned the NSA. He merely thinks that it just needs to be, you know, reformatted. They just need to sort of fix the, you know, the bad apples within NSA. But that really, you know, spying on, you know, foreign governments and all these other things, that's wonderful. That's a real positive. So again, you know, you're met with this sort of doublespeak from all of these people. And unfortunately, a lot of things sort of get lost in that, and people don't want to start looking into this any further.
Well, in fact, even us having this conversation may be, well, maybe ominous, may put us in the crosshairs of not the government per se, but by Tor advocates themselves. A really interesting development has taken place over the past couple of months involving an incident where one of the Tor developers actually doxed and outed one of the Twitter critics of this developer. And for those who aren't familiar with internet lingo, doxing means to find the personal information about a person who is pseudonymous on the internet. So this particular Twitter user at JBJabroni10 is someone who has been quite vocal about the snow job and about Tor being a false hope and things of that nature. And someone that I had interacted with on Twitter at various points. So so this is someone who was eventually outed and exposed. His personal details were exposed. His employer was outed and contacted about the types of tweets that he was making online and things of that nature. And it's quite, I mean, there's so many different layers to this, but of course, I mean, the obvious one is the interesting dichotomy of the privacy advocates who actually dox and out the personal information of someone who's trying to be pseudonymous on the internet, which is all kinds of irony. Pierce, perhaps you can give us a sort of an overview of this story and the way that it developed in various parts of the media.
Absolutely. So, you know, as you said, it was in late November of 2014. Andrea Shepherd, who is a very, famous perhaps, but she's a very big person, not only in the internet, but in the sort of internet activist community. She is a Tor developer. And as you said, she doxed an individual who also went by the name Geronimo. And this was, you know, very quickly picked up by the mainstream media, both in The Guardian as well as Vice, which has come to the defense of, you know, many of these interesting characters who work at Tor. But of course, they sort of painted this as JG Jabroni 10 or Geronimo as this horrible little troll who did nothing but spewed hate-filled, you know, attacks against this poor defenseless Tor developer who was just trying to save, you know, everybody from the big bad government. And, you know, they completely, you know, left out the fact that Geronimo, while maybe not you know, presenting his arguments in the most sort of intellectual way, he was pointing out serious problems within Tor, and that while he might have said some things that were rude or offensive to Shepherd, essentially at the end of the day, he was not doxxed because of that. He was doxxed because he was a vocal critic and, you know, would not sort of let up in his criticism of Tor, of the Tor project, and of the whole Snowden PSYOP. So this is the kind of crux of this. And, of course, The Guardian and Vice both took the line that the claims that Geronimo was making were based on Yasha Levine's conspiratorial, fear-mongering article about how evil Tor was. You know, there's nothing wrong with this. And, you know, anyone that thinks that this is, you know, strange coming from Vice, I would point everyone to the recent Vice party where they were celebrating, I forget, their whatever 10th anniversary or whatnot, where Sabu, the infamous snitch and FBI informant who used to work at LulzSec, attended the party. And no one there seemed to really care whatsoever. But again, there was a huge hypocrisy, not only in the fact that a Tor developer would dox somebody, but she was even quoted in the Guardian article as saying, oh, you know, it's funny, you know, maybe if he had been using Tor, this wouldn't have happened to him. So sort of selling the product that she is making for, you know, with the money from the government, and using that as this, you know, I don't even know what she was going at with that one. But very interesting. And of course, this story was, you know, or this action was defended by everybody who supports the Tor project. So we have Gillian York at the Electronic Frontier Foundation saying this was totally fine. We have Michael Lee, who I believe used to work at EFF and now works at The Intercept. So again, another connection there, saying, you know, this was okay as well. Jacob Applebaum, Runa Sandvik, all of these people, as well as a whole litany of Tor supporters, you know, on the internet in general, just average people. No one seemed to think that this was at all wrong. And of course, Geronimo, the man in question, you know, his place of work was outed. She even outed his parents' names. So, you know, this is a pretty serious thing. And of course, you know, no one in these articles ever says, you know, to Andrea Shepherd, why didn't you just block them? Why didn't you go into that? And of course, I think that the really interesting aspect to this is, of course, they picked somebody who did say things that were sort of rude and offensive. They picked someone that maybe didn't use the best sort of language when confronting someone with a critical argument, while they ignored several bloggers who have been doing some really excellent work on Snowden, Omidyar, Glenn Greenwald, and the Tor project itself. And I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with Tarzi, who writes the Rancid Honey Trap blog. He had he was threatened with doxing by Shepherd. And, you know, of course, you know, no one came to his defense whatsoever. And interestingly, in this whole doxing fiasco, Geronimo used multiple sock puppets to sort of get around. If someone did block him, he would create another account and, you know, attack them with a different name. Interestingly, Tarzi has been the victim of this very same tactic. There are been multiple accounts made to look like his real Twitter account, which mix in real things that he has said from months past with completely false things. And then, of course, big individuals jump onto this and say, oh, look at him. He's crazy. He's a nut. He's saying these horrible things. So interesting that the tactics that they're claiming are being used against them are also being used against people who I would say are probably of, you know, higher stature, or at least articulate their criticism in a much bigger way. But again, it doesn't really matter if Geronimo perhaps said, you know, mean things about these people, because, you know, many people within the pro-Tor community have said horrible things. Shepard has been accused of saying very homophobic things to several different people, including Yasha Levine and Mark Ames from Exile.com and Pando Daily. So, you know, again, this is quite interesting, again, with this whole sort of you know, attack and event that we've had in France and all this sort of free speech stuff that is perhaps going in a very dangerous direction. It's funny that, you know, we have people who are claiming that, you know, what happened in France, oh, well, that's okay because that's free speech. But if you say something nasty about a Tor developer, then, you know, you're that's the worst thing you could ever do. We're going to reveal, you know, your entire life.
Game on. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. No, I mean, again, the hypocrisy strikes one right away, and it was not unnoted online. There was quite a debate that took place even among the Tor community itself about what was going on, which actually necessitated a blog post on the torproject.org website, Solidarity Against Online Harassment, on December 11th, 2014, where basically they make the entire incident about the issue of harassment and basically saying we will not tolerate harassment of our people, and saying, of course, we won't tolerate it in ourselves as well. So basically, they try to make this into a, well, we'll wash our hands of this and just say we don't tolerate harassment, whatever that means. So I guess it means if you are quote unquote harassing. And let's be perfectly clear. I am not in any way trying to make any statement about what JB Jabroni 10 did or did not say in his tweets. I was not familiar enough with his tweets to know what kind of harassment he may or may not have dealt out there. I haven't seen anything directly that was much beyond sort of taunting people for the way they look or whatever, which, again, as you say, is not the right way to frame this at all, but it's hardly the most offensive thing I could find. But anyway, I'm in no way trying to absolve whatever may or may not have been said. I don't really know. But exactly the point that you make there, there have been intelligent and very forceful and articulate critics of this same stew of characters that have been completely ignored in this scandal by everyone, including, of course, the Guardian and Vice.com articles, as you say, that kind of gave one-sided, half-hearted coverage to this as kind of a snickering thing. Oh, look, this harasser got outed. Ha, ha, ha. He should have been using Tor, which has so many different implications, as you say. And of course, one of those critics who has been articulate and forceful in talking about the Greenwald, Snowjob, and Tor and all of these characters is Rancid Tarzi, otarzi.wordpress.com. And I'll include a link to that article where he talks about the attempts, as you say, to basically create Twitter accounts that look like him online and then tweet silly and insane and harassing stuff to other people in order for the blowback to come back on him, kind of a Twitter false flag, a virtual false flag going on. Just an amazing sequence of events that preceded all of this. And then I will also include a link to one of, I think, a very interesting, at any rate, I think one of the best overview articles of this entire doxing drama that I was able to find from 100flamingos.wordpress.com. Taxpayer-funded privacy advocates, liberal pundits, and Nazi rapist snitch allies make case for doxing critics. You are literally next. Which has a lot of information about this scandal and the various players in it and how it unfolded. Again, there's a lot of drama in here and a lot of different things to follow up on, so I don't want to try to make some some sort of totalizing case for what happened and how it happened. But I think the implications are quite clear, again, that if you are branded as being harassing of others online, then apparently it is now okay for Tor developers or whoever else who claims to be on the side of privacy to actually out your personal identity. And obviously, I guess that's not such a big deal for people like yourself or myself who go by our real names. Although, then again, I mean, of course, there's more private information that can be really revealed and released, like home addresses and bank accounts and things of that nature that can, of course, be outed as well. So it starts to get into some very creepy areas. And I think there's so much here that needs to be exposed. But of course, is there a chilling effect that comes from all of this? I mean, are people who are sitting on the outside of all of this going to look in and say, well, I'm not going to go near it because now I might be next and someone might do a doxing of me?
Mm. Oh, absolutely. And I think that this whole the doxing thing, just in general, the sort of attacks that people get by and large on Twitter. And I myself have been, you know, I've gotten into very long, you know, arguments with certain Tor supporters, including Jacob Applebaum, you know, where you're called everything from a nut to a conspiracy theorist to you're crazy. And I think this is a, you know, overall, this is a great sort of way for the people that are pushing a certain narrative with Tor and with Snowden to scare anybody, because this is there is a dark side to the internet. There's no doubt about that. And this, you know, this sort of harassment, this doxing, things like this are really ugly and quite scary things. And I think it does sort of, to many outsiders, will look at this and say they simply don't want to get involved. They don't want to even know what's going on here. So, yeah, I think it's a wonderful way to shut down the entire argument. It's a wonderful way to have people censor themselves. You know, oh, well, you know what? I'm not going to say this certain thing on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. You know, I'm not going to include a link to this particular article because I'm afraid of what's going to happen. So, yeah, I think it's creating a very tense and scary environment. And of course, it is even more ironic that this is, you know, being created by the very people who are attempting to create a program which would protect people from this very environment. So again, you know, hypocrisy, irony, whatever you want to call this, this is a very, you know, dangerous sort of situation that we're getting into. And I just want to say, you know, briefly right now that, you know, the alternative media gets many, many, many things wrong. But I will say that by and large, the issue of Tor, the issue of Snowden, Greenwald, The Intercept, the Omidyar Network, all of this stuff has been really amazing. And I think that the reason that people within the Tor community are resorting to things such as doxing and other, you know, things of that nature is because they are completely losing the narrative. They're, you know, the Snowden story doesn't hold up. This whole Glenn Greenwald, The Intercept, you know, Omidyar Network, that no longer holds up. And they're losing the game here. They're losing the fight. And because of that, they are resorting to some very nasty sort of, you know, tactics to sort of change that narrative. And I think ultimately what they want to do here is to shut down the conversation, to shut down anyone from asking questions that might be uncomfortable to answer, and, you know, sort of scaring everybody so that they'll just sort of leave that alone and we can, you know, we can make Edward Snowden our patron saint. You know, perhaps he'll meet with Russell Brand and, you know, the whole world will sort of rejoice in some sort of utopia and everyone will use Tor and that's the end of it. You know, that's it. That's, you know, perhaps what they, you know, are looking for. But I really do think the alternative media has done a really tremendous job in researching this. And, you know, people like myself who have no, you know, I was never trained to do this at all. But, you know, anyone can do this. And that's what's so wonderful. And of course, you know, the people at Tor that are making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year with government money, they don't like that. So.
Well, exactly right. And again, this is kind of an overwhelming subject to start stepping in. And for people who are turned off by technology in general, I mean, the sort of specifics of something like Tor is going to be extremely overwhelming. So I would just say, first of all, please don't take my advice or my take on any of the technical aspects of this for gospel truth. Please do look into it for yourself. And in order to help you do that, I'll include, well, a plethora of links in the show notes. There's going to be more links than you can shake a stick at if you want to start getting into this. But I think the first place that people would do well to start peeling back these various layers of this onion is episode 26 of Porkin's Policy Radio, which of course will be front and center in the show notes. So Pierce Redmond, unless there's anything else you'd like to add to this conversation, I think we'll wrap it up there.
No, just to say, James, that I always enjoy being on your show, and you've done so much to promote the work that I do, and I just want to, you know, thank you again, and thank all of your listeners who are very supportive as well.
All right, well, we'll leave it there. Once again, Pierce Redmond, PorkinsPolicyReview.wordpress.com. Thank you for your time.